Well, I could not be happier to be back in here on a Tuesday. Could not be happier. There's a lot to get into today. It's only a two-hour show. Should point that out. We're out of here at 6 o'clock because we got some playoff footy in the city tonight, although they're not in the city, right? TFC taking on Nashville down in Hartford, which pretty much sums up 2020 for you. But we got some playoff footy tonight, and we had a ball game last night that was a fun game, very predictable outcome. We'll get to that momentarily. And there's a lot going on in the world. Good to be back.
Stupid picture of Beansy in the wheelchair or whatever.
No, he's got a
neck brace on. Like, come on.
That's the meme, right? Like, that's the meme going around where, what is it like?
How it started, how it's going.
That is the greatest meme going around, like, just basically, like, how it started, like, how it's going now. And then when I saw that last night, I was dying laughing because it couldn't have been a more perfect picture. Beansy staring into the camera, and then the neck brace. Was that in the hospital? Like,
oh,
he's
in the hospital. That was after Richie Aprile chased him down with a Cadillac. And that sums up Al's brother and the O-Dog, who are on a streak now that is just, I said this last week, it's the likes of which I've never seen before, and I spoke prematurely because now we are reaching world records. Like, this should be picking up international steam. They should be breaking into newscasts in Brisbane, Australia, and Tokyo, Japan, and all around the world. They should be saying, quick update, we know there's other stuff going on like COVID and all that, but it looks like the Bucks are going to lose tonight and not cover the number, which means Al's brother and the O-Dog chalk up another L. And I've lost track in terms of what games you guys have lost here.
You should have heard his spiel yesterday. This guy was over-the-top confident. He had this game dialed in. It was a no-brainer, and he gets dummied again.
But he sounds good while he's polishing a turd up. I keep saying that. It's like 0-11 now. It's like 11 in a row that he has just handed on a platter to O-Dog. And, I give you full credit for just saying, whatever you say, I'm going to go with it. It sounds good. Even the Tat Man was buying it, like, because he sounded so confident. But if you're spewing garbage and you're just confident.
Oh, it's very persuasive.
And it sounds good.
It's very persuasive.
You would think after a while I would say, okay, you shut up now. Whatever he just said, I'm picking the opposite.
That's what I did.
Even when I do that, I do it at the wrong time, like Indy and Tennessee, and I get rinsed there. So it's pretty bad when his own mother is asking him, are you doing this on purpose to lose? That's pretty sad.
Yeah, I saw that earlier today. Poor Al's brother. Like, he's getting it from every possible angle, whether it's on the air with us, at home with his mom, online, people are just ruthless. He is not intentionally trying to do anything. He's trying to pick winners. He sounds very convincing, and he is informed. He does his research. He does his work, and it sounds perfect. It sounds beautiful, but it just hasn't played out that well. And we've got a montage that we have put together. We're going to play this a little bit later on.
Oh, God.
It's only like a week long. You would think this is the better part of the whole season. We're talking like the last four or five games that have been picked on the show. We've put together something, or Mullen and the Grappler put some work in. So we'll get to that a little bit later on.
To be honest, though, yesterday you could tell it was BS because his whole logic was Tom Brady has not been good in prime time, and he's going to change that. And Brady threw an interception like he was throwing it to Al's brother.
Safety, it's getting ugly down there for Tom. Like, really, really ugly because everyone's sharpening up the knives, right? They've been waiting to get after him for a long time, just basically based on jealousy alone. You know, he's a great-looking guy. He's married to a supermodel. He's got six Super Bowls. He's the greatest player of all time in the biggest sport in American history, the most important position in American sports. Like, he's got it all. Every possible check that you need on a resume, Tom Brady has got it. And now everything is an issue for him because his stats are really starting to erode. You look at him throwing a deep ball. Over the last three games, according to Next Gen Stats, Tom Brady is 0-for-19 on deep passes of 20-plus in the air in his last four games. Sorry, that's four games, 0-for-19. He's thrown three picks in those four games. Like, he cannot connect down the field. And everyone is waiting to bury him. And even not shaking Jerry Goff's hand after the game. It's like, how dare you not do that?
Yeah. He wins. He's over there sniffing around looking for everybody to shake hands with.
Yeah, was it Shannon Sharp that teed off on him and said, yeah, you know what, you're fine fine when you win the game, but you know what, it's enough with calling him out or something. It was he should be called out. I thought Sharp was pretty aggressive with his comments.
He was.
Brady.
Well, there's a guy who's probably secretly been hating on Brady and waiting for him to just fall off the map.
Right.
And this is an example of it where Brady, when he has lost throughout his career, he has been petulant. He's a guy who has snapped on the sidelines. He is a sore loser. Like, he is a sore loser. It was never an issue, really, in the past because it was more glorified. You know, it wasn't that he hated to lose. It was, man, he really wanted to win, or whichever way you want to phrase it. You're right. Like, he wins a ball game. He's finding the water boy to shake hands with and take pictures with. And who am I?
Like,
who
everyone
am I exchanging jerseys with?
I love the floaters out there that are just like, I gotta shake Brady's hand. The nobodies, the bench players, they're like, what's up, Tom? And he's like, how's it going, man? Great game. I love those floaters out there. They just have to get out there, and when they see a superstar, they're like, I gotta shake this guy's hand. And he's all for it. But when he loses, and I don't mind it. Like, it's not sportsmanship to me. It's like, when I lose, but on the other hand, just do it every game. Run off every game. Because when I don't win a game, I'm pissed off too. So I don't want to shake anybody's hand or see anybody. So I'm running off. But I'm not going to be a phony. And when I win, act like I love everybody. Just run off for all games.
Yeah. Conversely, though, I will say this. Does Larry Goff deserve that much credit? You know what I mean?
A
sign of respect.
A sign of respect.
Quarterbacks,
the two positions. The coaches meet at half field and the quarterbacks meet. You know, that's just the way it goes, and historically it's always happened that way.
Right. Well, Harbaugh kind of nixed that on Sunday, too. He told Vrabel to stuff it, and he didn't want to shake his head.
Yeah, that was heated. I mean, both teams have been battling. There was almost a fist fight, I think, on the field. Like, that was a spicy meatball based on, I think, both teams were really agitated at each other. There was some genuine hatred.
That was a different context. Right. Like, this was Brady being a suck because he played like garbage and threw a pick and threw the game away. You know, and didn't want to. Basically, he's happy to run out there, and he knows that, a reporter's going to be chasing him for NBC or CBS or Fox or whatever, and he can play the role like, no, I'm looking for the guys. I got to go through my handshake routine, and then I'll stop and talk to you about how great I am.
Right.
But when he loses, he wants nothing to do with it. Right. It's the same thing with the podium. Like, postgame, he's got to go up and talk. He had no interest in doing it. And even the media down in Tampa is starting to give him the gears a little bit. Like, they're looking for the quote, basically.
Right.
And they know Bruce Arians is going to supply it. Like, they know Arians is coming in after Tom to basically throw him under the bus, which he basically suggested last night, and I think he doubled down today. Brady looks confused by the coverages, which is the last thing you would expect out of Brady. Confusion. Yeah. Right, he's been in the game for 20 years. He has seen every possible defensive alignment, and he looks confused. That is concerning.
Well, who's the coach from Notre Dame that we had on? Weiss?
Charlie Weiss, yeah.
He said this guy is the best ever at checking off what's available and going down a list in a millisecond and then delivering the ball to who's ever open. And you're right, Hayes. For someone to say that this guy looks confused, I mean, that is.
But you got to applaud. I have to be honest. You got to applaud the coach. Like, the coach could actually be, dummied by Brady, and instead he just tells it like it is. Like, I don't think he's trying to be mean to Tom or.
No, he's
or,
honest.
He's
That's
just telling
truth.
It. Like, hey, you know what? This is what's happening. Like, this is what I'm seeing. But he did have to walk his comments back. Was it week two or three? Remember, he had to.
Yeah, that
say,
was
you know
that
what?
Was. I think after week one, that might have been noodles. Like, after the game in New Orleans, he was like, "Bad throw, bad throw, bad throw, bad read." Then he was like, "Nah, now that I think about it, I better carve someone else up." But listen, there's only so far you can go. The game tape is going to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And the stats sheet is going to tell you the truth. And Tom Brady did not play well last night, and he has had a roller coaster season, and he is a mediocre quarterback right now. Like, and I don't think that's going to change. That doesn't mean you can't win with him. Doesn't mean next week he won't throw for 5 touchdowns and 400 yards. He might. But the week after that, he'll probably throw for 230 and 3 picks. Like, he is going to go back and forth and back and forth because he is not what he once was. He is never going to get back to being what he once was. And I think you can use the Peyton Manning experience in Denver as kind of a barometer of where Brady is. When Manning first moved to Denver, albeit much earlier in his career and at a younger age, that first year he was there, he was a rock star, right? He throws for 50 touchdowns, wins an MVP. Believe they got to the Super Bowl that first year and got smoked by Seattle, but got there. And then the last year before he retired was a mess, got replaced by Brock Osweiler at one point, went back in there, could not throw the ball more than 20 or 25 yards down the field, but they won a Super Bowl. Brady is closer to the end of the line than he is at the start of the line in Denver for Manning. He's not quite there. He can still throw. He can still stay upright. He hasn't lost the zip necessarily, but he needs help. He needs a great defense. He needs a run game. He needs protection. He needs coaching. Tom Brady alone is not going to drag you anywhere.
And he keeps the flies off. He keeps the flies off after every poor loss with a stunning performance in the next game.
Right.
They'll go out and dummy somebody, and it'll be like, okay, there's the Tom we know. These guys can be Super Bowl contenders, blah, blah, blah. And then he just, like clockwork, he'll go out in a big primetime game Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday night, and stink the joint out. That's what he's been doing.
Well, they got Kansas City next week.
Oh, so, good luck.
Geez,
yeah,
good luck,
that Chiefs defense has not been great, but you're going to have to score 40 points to win.
Yeah, because Mahomes put up that just for fun.
Just for fun. That final drive he had Sunday night was just outrageous. That is as simple as I think I've ever seen a two-minute drill. Seven plays, 75 yards, took like a minute and a half. Kelsey's wide open. Like, it was just
wide open.
Wide open. John Gruden for $10 million a year. Maybe tell your corner or your safety or whoever was covering him. Might want to keep an eye on that guy.
We were
pretty
talking about
player.
Mahomes yesterday, Hayes. I just think they try to look around for something different. Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray. But this guy's going to be the MVP for 10 years straight.
Wouldn't be shocking.
No other way around it, man.
Yeah,
he's that good.
Wouldn't be shocking. He's that good.
That's why they gave him $500 million, though. It's not like he's, you know, come out of nowhere. He's not Fred Van Vliet, you know what I mean?
No.
Like undrafted and, you know, the great story.
How long can that go on? I'm glad you brought that up because Van Vliet had his presser today. He had a backboard where it was, like, sponsored by his own brand or something.
Dude, let me just interrupt
it's
here.
It's actually pretty hilarious.
I had to comment on that. I took my comment down with the reporter, but I'm like, okay, bud, you got your $84 million. Just kind of act like it. Act like you belong. Act like you deserve it. Don't put the logo up that it looks like you drew with a Sharpie with a Vegas chip in a money bag in it. It just looks corny, man. It's stupid. You don't. You're above that. You're an $84 million man. We all get it. You were the guy that shouldn't have made it. Did. But don't draw a logo and put it as your backboard. It's silly. Stop it.
Well,
stop doing that.
Well, the second you sign the deal, you're no longer that guy anymore.
No.
Now
you're a heavy hitter.
You're a heavy hitter.
And
I
that's
think
what I,
to be
sorry.
To give credit to him, I think he acknowledged it at the end of the interview. He was thanking people. He thanked the media, and he kind of joked around. He said, "Now that I've made this cash and signed this deal, you know, try not to
destroy
crap
me.
All over me or whatever." But now you are no longer the free agent that no one knew about. You're no longer the guy that was playing in the D League. You are Fred Van Vliet, worth a fortune,
a
cornerstone of a very good team that has to go out and perform. And that's who you are now. And you built up that rep. You deserve that rep in that definition as a player. But don't think anyone is going to consider the fact that you didn't get a look in college or whatever. You didn't go to Duke or Kentucky. No one cares about that anymore.
It's over.
No.
I mean, he is. He's one of the premier players for the Toronto Raptors. But we talked about it yesterday. We had Jack on, and that was my whole concern. And it's not because Van Vliet is going to change or anything like that, but pressure and living up to a contract is a lot different. And I know basketball is different than hockey, and I always bring it back to hockey, but he still has a ton of pride. He knows he signed for a boatload of money, and he's going to take it on upon himself to feel that pressure. How he responds, I'm sure Nick Nurse is probably going to have to pull him aside a few times and say, hey, just play your game here. You don't have to go out and earn $84 million every time you're on the court. Like, just relax and play, because I can almost see a guy like that, to your point, where act like you've been there before. He's never been there before. So this is going
to
be
all new for
him.
What he's got to understand is, and it's so difficult, and you saw it maybe a little bit with Siakam, I'm not sure, but players think they were given he was given $84 million for what he brings to the table. Not something different. What he does was the value that the Raptors gave him that money for. He just has to go out and do it on a regular basis and be a consistent scorer and a great player. A good player to a great player on a nightly basis. That's what he was paid for. If he goes out there and thinks he has to be Steph Curry every night, he'll not succeed. And that's what happens to players. They get it in their head that they have to be something that they're not. What he brings to the table when he's at his best is why he was paid. So just go and do that. Very simple.
That's exactly what has to be expected. Nothing more, nothing less.
No.
You're not all of a sudden 7 feet. You know,
no.
You are what you are.
And you were given 84 sheets for what you do when you're playing well.
Yep, and you're worth every penny. He earned that. He deserved it. I don't think it was an overpayment, but I don't think it was an underpayment. I think it was an appropriate business transaction that Fred VanVleet deserves. And I do think he benefits greatly by the fact that Lowry is still here for at least another year. I think that really helps Fred VanVleet ease into this contract a little bit, because if it coincided with Lowry leaving – and all of a sudden you are the man and you are the guy in the backcourt that has to basically drive everything, that really could maybe affect the way he plays. But luckily for him, Nick Nurse, Masai, Bobby Webster, Raptor fans, Fred VanVleet can come in and play the exact same role he did a year ago very effectively. And I was a little bit surprised by the overall reaction to the whole weekend here in Toronto, because I thought we were all kind of on the same page. Like, I would have preferred Serge Ibaka coming back, of course. Like, yeah. I really wanted to see that happen. That burned that he left. They are a lesser team today than they were a week ago because he is no longer here.
Right.
But signing VanVleet was the priority, and they got that done. And I got overshadowed because Ibaka left like a day later, and then Gasol, the rumors pop up that he's going to the Lakers. But Fred VanVleet was the priority. It got done, and it got done with confidence. Again, was not an overpayment, locked in long term. And Masai Ujiri and company have always prioritized next offseason, right? Like, they realize they need a superstar on this team or multiple stars. And Serge Ibaka does not check that box. Marc Gasol does not check that box. And the best-run organizations stick to a big-picture plan. That's what they do. And for the Raptors, it was 2021. And then you have multiple options for the upcoming one. Sure, you wanted Ibaka on a one-year deal? I would be shocked if Serge took it personally that after everything he's done for this team, he was still a casualty after a year. You know, that may have factored in. He may have sat there and said, wait a minute, Giannis wasn't on that court in Golden State. Giannis didn't do what I did this past year for this team. You're telling me I can only take 1 year so that you can chop me out and you can go get someone else next year? I could see him taking that personally. I might take it personally. But I like the fact that the Raptors said, this is business, man. Like, yeah, we want you back. We'll overpay you, but for 1 year, because we got a big picture plan and we're chasing it starting next year.
Well,
and
the thing I talked
like
to Jack, the thing I talked to Jack about yesterday for the amateur basketball fan, Brian, the Raptors fan, which you could probably loop myself in there. They're setting themselves up for what if this doesn't work out? Like, what are your big plans next year? What happens if next year the big fish is not in a Raptors uniform? As a fan, are you thinking, okay, we're just going to be the team that gets to the first round? We probably get dummied. Because if you look at the East, Brooklyn is going to be on the scene now. Miami just went to the NBA Finals. Boston's going to be there. Philadelphia probably thinks they got better. So where are you going to be at next summer if you don't land one of these particular players? And I'm sure the guy you're referring to mostly is Giannis. So it's kind of like, man, that's really disappointing. If after next summer you're sitting there and all the chairs have been moved around and you got nothing, I don't know where that leaves you.
Yeah, well, what might potentially leave you in a lesser spot, clearly, than if you signed Ibaka to a multi-year deal, which I would assume he likely would have been receptive to. You know, they could have offered him a 2 or 3 year deal, then he probably comes back and you run out 50, 55 wins in the East that's watered down. You could potentially get to the NBA Finals. But I don't think you're beating the Lakers when you get there based on the way they're currently built, with or without Ibaka, with or without Marc Gasol. And you guys mentioned this before. It's like flying first class. Once you've flown it once, you can't go back. And Masai and company and the Raptors fan base and company, they have tasted first class with Kawhi and a championship. And I think it is incumbent on this organization, but moreover the fans and the media, to understand you got to go chase that. You got to be in that game. Like you have to be, because now you've got a core locked up. Van Vliet in the backcourt, Anunoby on the wing, Siakam in the front court. Like, that is a good three-piece core, but you got to upgrade on top of all three of them. Sure. Like, you got to. Now, hopefully it's Giannis. If it's not, maybe it's someone else. You know, maybe it's – I'm not going to name names because I don't have it in front of me, but – and maybe it's via trade. Maybe you go up there and do Kawhi 2.0. But, you know, we did the middle of the pack, let's just be good for a long time, and then surge to the mountaintop. And I think the Raptors and Raptors fans are like, we got to get back there. And this is how you get back there. You have flexibility and you chase a superstar to work alongside a very solid core, maybe the best coach in the NBA, maybe the best front office in the NBA. You get there, man. Yeah, you're right. It might fall off, but what if it doesn't? What if it comes through? Like, what kind of attitude do we have this time next year? We're talking NBA finals again.
Right.
And potentially chasing a championship.
And I will say, you had one day off and you haven't missed a beat.
You haven't missed a beat.
You're bringing the heat. It's only a 2-hour show. I knew you were going to need a lot of airspace to talk today because you had a lot of things to get off your chest. It's a great start for you. Let's keep it going after the break.
And Green Bay's a disaster, too. You're
well,
have to
let's
talk.
Not get crazy.
They suck.
Indianapolis, pretty good team.
Yeah.
Very
Beansy,
good team.
Beansy and the Packers. Yeah.
Beansy and the Pack. Right. Speaking of which, we've got a montage that we will play.
No.
But we're going to sit on this for a while, but don't you worry. We'll get to it. Speaking of Green Bay as well, Catherine Tappan is going to join us from NBC.
Yeah.
She's going to be there sideline reporting for the Packers-Bears game on Sunday night. We'll catch up with her. Christian Jack later in the hour. TFC Nashville in Hartford. Playoff time, MLS Cup playoffs. We'll catch up with KJ, tee up that game tonight. And Ray will join us just after 5 o'clock. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Ray Ferraro will join us just after 5. I don't know if it's considered an official COVID outbreak, but there have been 3 positive tests at Team Canada's junior camp out in Red Deer, 2 of which are players. So we'll catch up with Ray, and he's supposed to be heading there, I believe, the next couple of days, right, or this weekend to call a game with Gordon. No one knows what's going to happen out there.
That's what I can't figure out. How the hell did you get COVID if you've just been with your teammates in the same hotel, quarantining, bus?
Wow, it's
maybe flying in, and it took a while. I don't know the science behind it, or what these kids are doing, or who has it, or how they got it. But fact is, the numbers are what they are, and we'll see what Ray can tell us about that. We also had a mute malfunction on a New Brunswick COVID update. You guys see the video on that?
Yes.
We'll get to that a little bit later on. But it's a big week down in the States. Thanksgiving, 3 ball games on Thursday, we think, although the Thursday nighter is in jeopardy now because there is a COVID outbreak with the Ravens. And the Sunday nighter is a battle of the NFC North, Bears at Lambeau taking on the Packers. And Catherine Tappan from NBC, a reporter and host, and we all know her from the NHL on NBC. We used to see her up with us all the time,
NHL
right up here at
Network.
TSN.
Me and Noodles worked with her.
That's right. And now she's going to be on the sideline at Lambeau Field on Sunday night. That's going to be incredible. She joins us now. How you doing, Catherine?
Hi, guys. I'm good. Thanks for having me on. You know, I was kind of upset all these years you guys have had this show and you've never invited me on. I had to get on Sunday Night Football for you guys to invite me, Noodles.
That's right.
Noodles.
Yeah, Noodles.
Listen, there's an open invitation. We weren't sure if who we had to talk to. I mean, now you're a big shot on the national TV. We weren't sure if you'd return our call. That's what it was.
You know, debatable. O'Don's easy for sure.
There you go.
How
fair
are you guys?
Enough.
Yeah, we're doing well. Yeah, it's... I mean, we were talking – well, we didn't really bring this up yet, but we were going to get into it, the fact that the ratings are skyrocketing again with football, not to put any more pressure on you, but I guess they're expecting like 20 million plus to be watching on Sunday night. Does that ever pop into your mind? Do you think it will on Sunday? It's going to be incredible to see out there at Lambeau Field.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know the big games when you do them, and you guys know this from playing in big games, but, you know, I've done – Super Bowls and not on the sideline, but certainly the pregame and the postgame, which is a humongous number to begin with. We did Notre Dame, Clemson, which brought in a big number a couple weekends ago in prime time on Saturday night. And yeah, the numbers are big for Sunday night. It's the biggest show in network television. So, I mean, you know that going in, and you just have to, I'd say the nerves are more the exciting nerves. It's an incredible opportunity. I'm honored to be able to do it. And, you know, just stepping into Michelle Tafoya's shoes for the night, which are, you know, very challenging shoes to fill, and I don't plan on filling them, but she's the, you know, she's certainly someone I've looked up to my whole career and have had the opportunity to learn from and to talk with throughout the week. So, yes, it's a huge stage, but I think, you know, we prepare the same way every week, and we'll be ready to go on Sunday. It's a great matchup, one of the most historic, if not, yeah, the oldest rivalry in the NFL, and Lambeau Field is a shrine. So it'll be really incredible to be there on Sunday night.
What's the key to being on the sidelines, KT? Obviously, you've done big games behind the desk, but when you're on the sidelines, you got to just have those nuggets there during the game where if a guy makes a play, you got to have a backstory. Just in your mind, what's the key to being on the sidelines and doing the job well?
Yeah, you know, O-Dog, that's part of it. But, I mean, I think the biggest thing for me, what was told to me very early on in my career and when I got the opportunity to do Notre Dame football 7 seasons ago on NBC, it was you have to be the eyes and the ears to the booth and to the truck. I mean, there is stuff that I'm privileged to see down there, things that, you know, no spotter's going to see, no camera's going to pick up. And certainly, you know, Mike Tirico and Tony Dungy calling this game on Sunday as well. So my sole responsibility, storylines aside, is to be able to provide the flavor of what's happening on the field, what players are saying, which, by the way, is a lot easier during a pandemic because there's no fans to block the noise. Maybe guys are nursing an injury on the sideline. You know, that's constant. I always tell people it's a thankless job for sidelines because you may not see me, you know, throughout the entire game. You maybe only see me a couple times, but I'm constantly feeding information back to the truck that is being filtered to the broadcaster. You may hear Mike Tirico say, hey, Catherine told us in the commercial break, XYZ. I mean, this is what you do, and you're just really trying to get the flavor, how guys' demeanor is, you know, with their heads down after a play, like who's rallying the troops on the sideline. This year it's a bit different. We don't have the opportunity to go as many places as we usually do because of the social distancing and because of the rules and regulation, especially with the NFL. So that'll be different for me on Sunday. The college rules are different than the NFL rules. But the primary responsibility, you can have all the storylines in the world going into a game, but you might not get to them. And that was the case, you know, for me with Clemson. It was tough. The play was moving so quickly. As soon as that quarterback snaps the ball, they're not coming down to me. You know, the play is on the field, not what I have to say about whose dad I talked to during the week about certain players. So it's definitely a challenge. You're trying to get in the 10, 15 seconds I can tell a story in. You know, you try and sneak it in when you can, but mainly make sure I see everything that's happening on that field that my colleagues don't have the opportunity to see from that vantage point.
KT, you mentioned it just briefly, and that's kind of where I wanted to head, is how is COVID really affected this, and how are you going to have to adjust? I think I saw Jared Goff get interviewed yesterday, but after the game, but it was I'm not sure who was interviewing him, but they were screaming from 20 feet away. Like, yeah. Has there obviously been a little bit of adaptation here with COVID, around us?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've tried to, you know, I interview the coaches coming out at halftime and my mask is up and you have to stay far away. It's very hard. I mean, you guys know this just from day-to-day life. You can't read lips anymore. You can't figure out certain inflections of people's faces. So that's a challenge. But typically for the post-game interview, what we will do is, you know, the winner of the game Sunday night, whatever, you know, quarterback or star of the game, will put the headsets on. I'm in the stands. He's on the field. And he'll put the headsets on. I've got my microphone and earpiece in, so I can hear him fine. He'll hear me fine. And we both are looking into a monitor of each other. So I'm not even looking at him in real life. I'm looking at a monitor that shows me what his, you know, what he's saying. So that's been different. Interviewing the coaches from 6 feet apart with headsets on has been different. You know, these are just the new ways we're working right now. And, you know, player interviews we do throughout the week or on the field pre-kickoff when I'm trying to gather information, you can't do that anymore. It's all through Zoom. You don't get that human interaction that you normally would get when you're trying to gather really good nuggets for the game. But yeah, it's been different. All of it, life has been different. So
yeah.
I'm just happy I'm doing sports, you guys. I mean, I spent 4.5 months twiddling my thumbs doing Zoom shows, and it was not fun. So
yeah.
Just to be able to be on the sidelines and to do the hockey playoffs as we did without any glitches was awesome. So fingers crossed we can continue on this path and keep trending upwards.
With Catherine Tappan from NBC Sports, she'll be a part of the broadcast crew Sunday Night Football. Packers-Bears at Lambeau. You can watch that, of course, on TSN up here. Speaking of the NHL, we don't really have any clarity on when they're going to return, but at some point we believe it's going to happen. Do you have a number in mind in terms of games that you're hoping for, you know, that would make it a legitimate season, whether it's, you know, 40, 50, 60, or are you just okay with dropping the puck at any point and let's play and get to the playoffs and make it feel like a normal, you know, hockey season again?
Yeah. Well, I think number one is going to be the safety of the players. How are we going to do this? Because, you know, they're not going to, it's not going to be the same situation we saw, as you guys know, during the playoffs. But yeah, I'd love to see 60 games. That would be awesome if we could start January 1. I don't know that that's going to happen. It's probably unrealistic to think that that's the target date. But I know as soon as they're ready to go, they'll try and maximize and get in as many games as they can. You know, and that's the exciting part. I remember in the years we've had lockouts. I mean, it's fun because the second they drop the puck when the season starts, it's a dogfight to the finish. So every single game matters even more than it would in October and November of a regular season. So no matter when it starts, we'll see a great product on the ice and teams gunning for the finish line right out of the gate. But I hope it's 60. I mean, realistically, we're probably looking at a little bit less than that. And I'm curious to see how they do it. You know, we've all heard about the different bubble situations, and it's going to take a sacrifice on behalf of the players to agree to this. And I know we all know they're the greatest athletes in the world to cover, and will do their best to get the right deal in place. But it's got to be safe for everybody, and that includes families that are left behind at home during this time. So just a lot of uncertainty, but I'm hoping we get it going. And the NHL did a great job with the playoffs. I have no doubt they're going to figure this one out too.
Well, that's where I was going to go. I think, you know, we all share the same sentiment that the NHL did a fantastic job in the bubble and the entertainment value was fantastic. And how was your experience through it all as far as just watching the games and really feeling that excitement? Because I think everyone kind of experienced it differently. For me, once the game got going, I didn't really notice no fans. I didn't really notice the lack of emotion in the building. I don't know. How did you perceive it?
No, I totally agree with you, Noodles. I mean, I thought the players were playing as if it was a normal regular season game in front of, I don't know, 30,000-40,000 fans in the arena. So, you know, being in the studio, we don't hit the road typically anyway until the Stanley Cup final. I'll hit the road during the conference final, and obviously our broadcast team is very different than that. But the studio crew, we're in the studio anyway. I think the biggest difference for me was 5 games a day and being in the studio from like 9 a.m. until 2 a.m. and wondering, you know, what is going on. I saw enough hockey, that's for sure. But, you know, I think the Stanley Cup final was really when it hit me that this is totally not normal. You know, it was weird doing a game in the studio, not being on site. We always do an incredible pregame show and the venue is great everywhere we go. The cities are great. The travel, I mean, you guys know half the fun of being a sports broadcaster is being there and feeling it and breathing it and then traveling to the next city and doing it all over again and running into colleagues and bumping into them at dinners. And that element was gone. And it was sad to me. And then to watch the cup be hoisted with no fans and no family there to celebrate, I just felt bad. I felt bad for the guys. I'm glad they got the opportunity to celebrate in Tampa when they got home, and it was just different. But that's when I really felt it. Other than that, I mean, I thought the NHL did an amazing job from an entertainment perspective, which we see at the All-Star Games and we see at the Winter Classic. But give credit to Steve Mayer and his crew. I mean, you were watching those games and the banners on the side and, you know, even like the times they would flash to the family members of these players if they'd score a goal. It was really, really well done. So, yeah, I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, well, hopefully we get back there sooner rather than later. And you're one of the lucky ones. You're going to be on the road this weekend. It's going to be an awesome night. No fans, but it's still Lambeau Field. And
that's right.
Yeah, and enjoy that.
No cheese heads when I'm driving in. It's going to be
right.
Weird.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very strange, especially with the Bears too, right? Like, it doesn't get any bigger than that on a Sunday night. Would have just been massive.
I know. Well, it'll be massive in its own way, the way everything this year has just been a little bit different. So yep. we'll roll with it.
Well, we look forward to seeing you again Sunday night. Catherine Tappan from NBC should be a part of the broadcast team, Packers, Bears. We look forward to that. We look forward to seeing
you
back with the NHL and NBC, and we'll do this again down the road. Thank you for this.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Be well, guys.
You got it. There's Catherine Tappan from NBC. And, yeah, that's going to be a cool gig. She's done, as she said, like almost everything in the business. But Sunday Night Football, Packers, Bears, NBC, that is the number one show on TV, you know, week in, week out. So that's
going to
be cool.
She's fantastic. Yeah. Oh, you worked with her. I worked with her a ton at the NHL Network. She's fantastic. So it's kind of been neat to see her rise into football and on the big stage down in the States, because she's an absolute pro and she's so good at it.
Yeah, she's a legend. She's like Duffy or like any of those unbelievable broadcasters you work with. Andy Petrillo's the same way.
Yep.
They never, ever, ever screw up. And they have the ability, like, you know, Hayes, when you're talking, doing that back panel on the deadline, when someone's in your ear, they have the ability, when that person just disappears and there's no connection, to totally understand what's going on and know when to go to commercial without any knowledge or what the hell's going on. That's when you can tell that they're a superstar, and she's definitely that.
Yeah, she is, and that's going to be fun on Sunday night. And at some point, she'll be back on NHL on NBC as well, and that will hopefully happen sooner rather than later. I'm not holding out hope on that.
I still think it's going to be February 1st, guys. I thought it was going to be January 15th. I think it's going to be February 1st now.
Yeah.
They're sniffing around online already. Owners don't care if they play or not. It's already starting. The garbage is already starting. So we'll see. We'll see what they got.
Oh, it's baseball 2.0.
It is, Brian. It's baseball 2.0.
Batman knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly when he wants to start, exactly how many games he wants to play. And this is all just a big facade. You know, oh, no, we're really trying to get it done. No, you're not. That's why you don't throw a curveball like a CBA adjustment in the middle of – you could have done that 2 months ago.
Yeah.
You know, they know
the
exactly what
they're
doing.
The ink's not even dry. The ink's not even dry in the last one.
Yeah. They know exactly what – it's exactly like baseball. It's the exact same thing. They're going to fight, and then magically come to a conclusion right when it sets them up to start on February 1st for 48 games or whatever. That's the way I see it trending now. Certainly makes sense. And it sucks, because why not January 1st? Why not 60 games? But they'll stall a month, and they'll cut it down by 12, and they have the framework for that, right? That's what they've done in the previous lockout years. So
you're right.
That seems more than likely where we're probably going here. But
I think it's sniffing around. You're right. I think they're going to play the facade 60, and it's going to be 48, and you know it. That's what's going to happen.
Ray Ferraro in about 20 minutes. Christian Jack coming up on TFC, starting their playoff pursuit in MLS Cup, taking on Nashville tonight. We'll tee that game up with him. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Ray's coming up in about 20 minutes. We've got a montage for you, an ice-cold montage, a loser's montage of Al's brother and the O-Dog and their picks over the past week and a half. Forget 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks. Just a week and a half. It's a rarity. We got the three of us at home, and KJ's in our studio right now because Christian Jack. Well, KJ's a big shooter, right? And he's obviously a big part of the game tonight with TFC taking on Nashville, and you can hear it on TSN Radio. You can watch it on TSN. So he has a free pass going back and forth, whichever studio he wants to, and he joins us now in our studio. What's going on in there, KJ?
How's it going, guys? I feel like I'm in your house. This is really awkward. I'm in your house, and you're not allowed in here with me. This is really strange. I promise to try and keep the place quiet and tidy a little bit. How about that?
Yeah, do whatever. Right. We haven't been in there in a long time. It doesn't
matter.
And we're
not going back there for a long time either.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a fun one tonight. Playoffs have kind of crept up on us because we were talking a lot about the supporter shield, and we love that quote from Vanny about a month ago, and then it didn't matter in the end because they kind of fell apart down the stretch. They lost 3 of 4. They got smoked by Philly, who passed them. And what does that mean for what we should be expecting going into the playoffs tonight?
Yeah, I think it showed that obviously without those top players, and they were injured a lot down the stretch, I think physically they were a bit beat up, and I think mentally as well. I mean, here they are, they're playing a home playoff game tonight. I'm not at BMO Field, they're not at BMO Field. We're not talking about a game in Toronto. We're talking about a game in Hartford, Connecticut, and that's where they spent the majority of the season playing home games. So the fact that they played a few games there away from their families, you know, the mental drain on that group, I certainly think and know that it had a bit of a strain on them. Since then, the international break came. They were allowed, because of the government protocols, to have that modified quarantine. So they've been training here, which I think has made a big difference. It's also given them some time, Brian, to get some of those healthy players back, and key players in that, Jonathan Osorio, Richie Larea, the two Canadians, and obviously the big ones, Jozy Altidore and Pablo Piatti, who we expect to see some form tonight, whether it's from the start or not, but we expect them to play. And they were significantly big losses during that stretch where they struggled to score goals.
I know it's just part of the game, KJ, but how brutal is it, this weather? I mean, they were clearing off snow yesterday. Other teams in hot markets, it's like they don't have to deal with that nonsense. Mm. How big of a factor is that, or is it just one of those things you got to suck it up and go out there and do it?
It's a little bit of that, isn't it? I think they do have to suck it up, to be honest with you, Jeff. But I know the one thing I would say is that this TFC team often refers to the weather when things start getting going a little bit. They turn up that stove a little bit in their mind, and it gets hotter, and the energy gets out there, and the intensity for playoff, and that's kind of coupled with so many memories over the last 4 years where the weather has been brutal. So maybe that's a good reference point for them. I think when it gets too far away, and I think of MLS Cups in Toronto, particularly the first one, when we're talking about -9, -10, I think it really has a significant detriment on the quality of play. No question about that. Should be okay tonight. We're borderline there, though, aren't we, at this point? But yeah, it's not ideal.
Well, speaking of which, I mean, I think that is going to have my eyes focused on Jozy Altidore tonight, who really has not played a lot of soccer in quite some time, and does have a history of playing in the cold, performing in the cold, being a playoff performer in the past, as we know. Subbed in a couple of weeks ago, played about 30 minutes, but as you said, expected to play tonight. But what can we really expect out of him, considering you know, he hasn't played a lot all year, the weather, the atmosphere, all that kind of stuff that he might feed off may not be available to him either.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's probably the biggest question amongst many going into tonight. You know, the whether he starts or comes off the bench, I think he's been enormous, an enormous void for TFC. And, you know, he's had a lot of injuries this year. We had another, obviously, issue with his hamstring where he missed a bunch of time. Hasn't really played a consistent amount of minutes for probably 15 months, when you think about that he wasn't even healthy last year in the playoffs, came on near the end of MLS Cup and scored in the final, but wasn't playing in the playoffs at all after being out for 5 weeks then as well. I know that Altidore loves these moments. You know, you guys, Jamie and Jeff, can talk a lot bit more about this than me. There's just something about some athletes in sports that find the big moments, and sometimes those games when they're not that, they are big, but they're not as big, sometimes they find a way to drift out of them. But these big moments, I know this is what he lives for. 8 playoff goals in his last 11 games, and big ones at that, to win MLS Cup, to win the Eastern Conference against Columbus 3 years ago as well. So I think he'll look to try and impose his qualities very quickly. They're playing a Nashville team tonight, guys, that have already played this week. They played in the play-in round, and I think that that comes as a little bit of a weakness for TFC. As the game goes on, I'm sure that they'll get their legs under them, but the intensity and the player focus will be right there from the start for tonight from Nashville. No one's giving them a chance, and that makes them a dangerous opponent, and TFC will be aware of that.
With Christian Jack, our TSN soccer analyst. Again, TFC taking on Nashville tonight down in Hartford. Their first playoff game of the year. MLS Cup playoffs kicking off on TSN. Kickoff at 6 p.m. You can hear right here on TSN Radio. Simmons and the Sun came out with a list of the 50 most influential, I guess, sporting figures of the past 15 years. And Tim Leiwicki was high on that list. And for me, this is an obvious answer, and I think the appropriate one. Leiwicki has been the most influential figure, I believe, in TFC history, because prior to him being here, they were an absolute disaster, And when he showed up, they marketed differently. They brought in international talent that was very effective, and they started winning. Would you concur with that, or do you have another name or two that might be higher on your list in terms of the history of TFC?
I completely concur, completely agree. You know, Leiwicki brought that arrogance and swagger to this city at a time when the city started to grow up as well. You know, I've been fortunate to live in this wonderful country, in this great city, for 20 years, and I've seen it change dramatically. You know, when I first came to this country, people would say, what are you moving to Canada for? And it's this, there's this sheepish quietness about that, oh, Canada's nice, but just don't tell people. And then over the last 10 years, that has developed a whole new era, a new generation of young people have come, and, you know, why can't we be great? Toronto versus everybody. The Raptors played a massive part of that. You know, hats with YYZ on, or YYZ on the people wearing them, the pride. And Laiwiki looked at that and said, we are a world-class international city. And why is TFC messing up every week? You know, why are they just, you know, they're practically just not even trying at this point, making mistakes, throwing bad money at bad decisions time and time again. Incompetence off the field leads to incompetence on it, no question about it.
Bingo.
That was the problem for so long. And so, you know, they needed to give them a chance, and then he brought that arrogance. He signed some players that were great, some players that weren't. The culture was set, the difference. And the other thing I would say is I saw the list, and I thought Giovinco at 50 was, I think he should be higher on the list. I think Bezbachenko was higher than him. I would have flipped that. For me, Sebastian Giovinco was the true culture setter. You know, right. This is a guy that, you know, flew home after playing for Italy one night on a Wednesday, on a Tuesday night, flew in that day on a Wednesday to play in that playoff game, to get TFC to their first playoffs, and scored that wonderful goal against the Red Bulls. And suddenly it was like, we couldn't keep DPs away from Europe, and now you've got DPs coming back to make them the priority. So I think Giovinco was absolutely enormous to change this team's culture around.
Yep, great stuff as always. Nashville TFC tonight, 6 p.m. kickoff on TSN. KJ and the boys will be all over it. Enjoy it, and we always appreciate you finding time for us. Thank you for joining us in our studio.
Always
KJ.
Love it, guys. It's great to be here. We miss you, and hopefully we'll see you in person sometime soon.
You got it, buddy. Yeah. There he is, Christian Jack, our TSN soccer analyst, to get TFC Nashville tonight on TSN and right here on TSN Radio. Hour 2 up next. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.